everybody. I'm trying to, like, confuse everybody, like, oh, I wonder what show this is. Yes, well, I kind of recognize that voice, though, that golden, beautiful, smooth radio voice. Okay, enough. This is the Dollars and Cents Show, everybody. Welcome. Yes, 2 weeks in a row. I can't tell you the last time I've hosted the Dollars and Cents Show. 2 weeks in a row. As if you know the history of the show, I started it way back in 1996. Oh, by the way, just in case you don't know much about it, hi, my name's Dave Simons, and I'm just an all-round nice guy. However, I do have a real job, and that is as a certified financial planner and partner in the Simons & Cordes Wealth Management Group, located within the friendly confines of UBS Financial Services. All right, so, 2 weeks in a row, which is typical or very atypical, especially during the baseball season, because there is a certain St. Louis Cardinals baseball team, you might have heard of them, that normally takes this time slot every Sunday. They don't even play tonight, which is a weird thing in baseball, and it's a very recent one. I remember this happening last year. I guess every team gets a Sunday off or something in the major leagues. I'm not sure why that happened or how, but I had to do a double take when Steve Moore asked me to come on again this Sunday. And I said, oh, Steve, I was just on. Well, no, I know. The Cardinals don't play Sunday. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's kind of an MLB thing now. They give these teams a Sunday off, which is very strange. But here I am and happy to talk to you, even though I will admit, my friends, I'm a little melancholy right now. And dare I say, a little depressed? Which does not ever happen to me. People who know me, I'm just that kind of even keel guy. You don't know if the market fell 1,000 points like it did last Monday, which we'll get to, or if it went up 600 points, just kind of a steady Eddie, even keel guy. But I'm a little down right now. And it has nothing to do with the financial markets. It has everything to do with the fact that we're having the closing ceremonies of the Summer Olympics. I am feeling a little down. I live for this stuff. I actually wish it would happen every year, but I suppose it would take away the kind of the specialness of it. I suppose every 4 years is the way it should be. But now to think I got to wait 4 more years out in L.A. And I'm going to it in L.A. This has been a bucket list. A couple of buddies of mine, we've been talking about this. Once it was announced in L.A. in 28, I don't care what it takes, what it costs, whatever, once in a lifetime thing, we are going. And I remember, I'm going to show my age here a little bit, my first Olympics, 1968, which was Mexico City. And I'll tell you why I remember it. Not so much for the events, but because I was fascinated by the announcers talking about the fact that how far above sea level this was. And in my six-year-old mind, it was hard to comprehend what they were really saying. I pictured them playing up like in the clouds, like they were playing at the top of a Mount Everest or competing at top of Mount Everest. That's in my six-year-old mind. I was so fascinated by that. And so everything was, for my six-year-old brain, around some of these records that were being broken. I'm like, well, they're playing in the clouds. No wonder. It's easier and things float up there. But my first real memory, where I was old enough, was in 1972. We were living in England at the time. Yes, we were. And that's one reason or one way that you'll remember the Olympics, because you were kind of out of your element. But believe it or not, my dad, who was a college professor, taught the great Jim Ryan. So if you're not familiar with him, look him up. Jim, and by the way, it's R-Y-U-N, Jim Ryan, from Wichita, Kansas. My dad is a Kansas native, taught him at the University of Kansas. Now, I don't say this publicly very often as a St. Louis native and proud graduate of the University of Missouri, Columbia, but I actually lived, yes, as a child, on the campus of the University of Kansas. Oh my gosh, I feel like I'm a traitor almost. I actually lived behind enemy lines. Yes, I did. And so my dad, who at the time taught the great Jim Ryan, of course, in 72. Now we're living in England on a teacher exchange program. And so we had to watch Jim Ryan. And I think, if I remember right, he ended up falling in 72. And he did get back up, but then by then he was out of the medal picture at that point. But a lot of things about 72. Obviously, we remember, of course, it was in Munich, but the hostages being taken. And as a 10-year-old, it's really scary. I think it was scary as an adult, but as a 10-year-old, you think this can actually happen? And here's, if there's one kind of funny thing, if you can make light of it, they kept talking about guerrillas. In my 10-year-old brain, I didn't understand, not only was it spelled differently, but had a completely different meaning. But they were talking about these masked invaders, these masked kidnappers, these masked murderers as guerrillas. And I thought, yeah, that kind of makes sense. You know, they act like guerrillas. They don't even seem, you know, human of how terrible of human beings they are. That's my 10-year-old brain. So it took me a while to fully understand. Now, I am going to make the segue, I promise, to the investment stuff because there is a lot to talk about. When we came back from England, we were over there on a teacher exchange program, settled back into our house in Florissant. We went in, it was 1973 when we came back. Now, of course, I know nothing about the stock market, financial markets. Nobody could have known that we were going into the worst period for the U.S. stock market since the Great Depression. That was the great 73-74 bear market. And as fate would have it, and I really believe this planted the seeds for me to eventually have a career in the business, my teacher, Mr. Waite, who, by the way, was a student of my dad's. By this time, we had left Lawrence, Kansas, KU, and my dad was part of the original teaching class at Florissant Valley Community College, or shortly after, maybe the second or third year. And one of his students, Mr. Waite, became my teacher in sixth grade. A few years later, we're now talking 73, 74. So the first time we walked in, I remember Mr. Waite looked at my dad and said, "Oh my gosh." Yeah. And so they had this big reunion. So Mr. Waite said, "We are going to learn about the financial markets and in particular the stock market. So here's what we're going to do. You all get play money." I don't even remember how much it was. Was it a few hundred dollars, $1,000? Doesn't matter. It's play money. "And you are going to pick one company that you think does great business. You understand their product. They make money, and you think that they will make you money being an investor." So we were learning. Mr. Waite was a terrific teacher and really teaching these sixth graders about what it was to be an investor in the American dream. And it was a contest. And at the end of the year, so this was going to last all school year. At the end of the year, we would see what kid picked the best stock. I picked Eastman Kodak. Good old Kodak. The reason is because, remember, we had just come back from being in England for more than a year, a little bit more than a year. I went to all of fifth grade over there. And we also took side trips. My parents took a lot of trips to Europe. I got to go on one to Athens, Greece. But we were always taking pictures, always Kodak, Kodak, Kodak. Monopoly in that field, of course. So it was a no-brainer for me. I'm picking Eastman Kodak. And I would follow it in the paper every day. We all learned to read the stock tables, and I would see it there. It didn't have the symbol, but it'd be abbreviated like EKKD or something like that, or ET, some kind of Eastman Kodak, and I would track it every day. But I noticed this. Almost every day it would go down. And all of my friends complained that their stocks were going down. We really didn't understand this thing called a bear market. And we certainly couldn't have comprehended the great 73-74 bear market. This is the honest to God's truth here. After the end of the year, when I think every student lost money, I remember thinking, this is the most stupid exercise I've ever been part of. Why would anyone invest or put their hard-earned money to work in America in these corporations when you lose money. This wasn't just 1 week or 1 month. This was an entire school year, and we all lost money. That's stupid. That's dumb. I will never invest. And I end up going into the business. It's kind of strange how that happened. But that's coming out of the 72 Olympics and my memories of that. And the market had actually been doing very well. There was something called the Nifty 50. And I just thought that that would continue as I started to learn about the stock market. And little did I know that I would get into that as a career. Funny how life works. Isn't that something? So anyway, so here we are in 2024 again, and the Olympics are here and gone, at least for the Summer Olympics. And I'm kind of sad. I have great memories of a lot of those Summer Olympics and even the Winter Olympics, but always Summer Olympics for me. And so we will just wait for a couple more years, I guess, when the Winter Olympics are here. But I'm getting out to LA in 28. There's no doubt about it. All right. When we come back, folks, we are going to dive into some things that have really been happening. And I'm going to remind you what I said last week. And little did I know that the volatility that I was talking about last Sunday, well, that was going to be peanuts for what we saw the very next day. We'll put that all into perspective. Explain what's going on right now, how this all works. I'm glad you're here so much. My name is Dave Simons. You are listening to the Dollars and Cents Show. It's 3:16 in St. Louis, and we shall return.
Diverse opinions, mutual respect. That's the politics you'll find at KMOX. Your connection to St. Louis and the region.
Welcome back, everybody. Dave Simon sitting in tonight. It's the Dollars and Cents Show. Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. It's been, I think, quite some time, and happy to be here. One more thing on the 72 Olympics, even though I slightly remember some stuff about 68. 72 is where it really kicked off for me and would really kind of solidify my love of sports. But outside of the horror of the hostage situation and the Israelis who were killed, to this 10-year-old, it was like you were watching a horror movie. But I remember the things that stand out for me, Dave Waddle, how could you not just be moved by him? He's such an endearing character with that golf cap. Steve Prefontaine. And my dad even saying, what's my name? Prefontaine. Ask me again and I'll tell you the same. The stuff that you remember as a kid. Now, I'm just laughing. I think my dad's so funny and clever. But certainly remember that. Mark Spitz, of course. How could you not forget? Or how could you forget Mark Spitz? So that's where I found my love, really, of sports. I would eventually, as many of you know, make a career out of it for about 10 years, becoming a sports reporter out of the great journalism school at Mizzou. And then out of the blue, and I know many, if not most of you know my story, but in the early 90s, did a complete you just switch of careers. Don't ask me what connection there was. Well, that's a whole other story I won't bore you with. But just changing careers and going into the world of financial advisory services more than 30 years ago. But I've never lost that love of sports and still love the Olympics like nobody's business. So sad that it's gone, but we'll count it down here to 28 in LA. And I'm telling you, I'm going to be there. All right. I've got to give the disclaimer, folks, before I go any further. So give me a couple of seconds. Here we go. The views and opinions expressed are those of me, Dave Simons, and are not those of UBS Financial Services, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. UBS reserves the right, to the extent permitted under applicable law, to retain and monitor all communications taking place through this program. All content, information, and opinions herein should be regarded as being general in nature and provided for current interest and information purposes only. It should not be construed as an offer to sell or solicitation of an offer to buy, nor recommend any security. Some content may come from third parties who are unaffiliated with UBS, and UBS has no control or responsibility over these third parties or their opinions, information, or materials. Whew, okay, got through that. All right, so we're going to keep this above board as much as possible, because it can get a little technical. Exactly what the heck happened last week? We hear about these hedge funds and margin buying and borrowed money and Japanese currency and what the heck? I understand if you're not deeply embedded into the intricacies of global investing, how this would all be so confusing. Honestly, look, here's the deal. Learn and educate yourself as much as you want to. Seriously. But if you have your own financial plan, whether you do it yourself or you work with a professional, then most of the time this stuff really is noise. So I don't want to place too much emphasis. This is more just kind of an informational show as much as anything else to try to fill in some of the holes with information that maybe you don't quite get in other places, or they just explain it in a matter-of-fact technical matter and it still doesn't make a lot of sense to you. So let me sort of explain to you 30,000-foot view here of what the heck happened last Monday when the Dow fell more than 1,000 points and you're hearing about the Japanese stock market and borrowing here and going long here and margin, all that. Okay, so this is a very simplistic way to explain what happened and why we still need to know a little bit about it, because I don't know that this cycle has completely played itself out yet. So the big boys and girls on Wall Street, as I call them, the big institutional players, they're a different game. They do this for a living. They're working for the hedge funds and things like that. All right. So they look around the world and they say, what can we exploit legally? What can we take advantage of? Where are the discrepancies that are occurring in various global markets that we can do one thing over here and do another thing over there? And when we combine them together, wow, we make billions of dollars in profits. And what's been happening lately is something called the carry trade. Now, there's always a carry trade in something. And typically what happens is you exploit a couple of different investment opportunities simultaneously. I'm going to just narrow down on what's happened here lately and why the Japanese stock market is involved here. So a lot of your big boys and all the money centers around the world, from London to Tokyo to New York, but we'll just keep it here in the U.S. They say, we want to borrow money, but we want to do it cheaply. And interest rates around the world have gone higher. We know that here in the U.S. They're down from their peak, but they're still higher than basically the zero interest rates that we had for a long, long time. Oh, look over there in Japan. They haven't had rates much above 0% in decades. In fact, I would point out that their interest rates, and I'm looking at the chart here, wish I would have brought my glasses as a reminder, but basically rates were below zero. Now, that's a whole other discussion. How do you have borrowing rates? How do you get a negative return on your CD at your bank? That's a whole other discussion. But Japan has had that, plus some other countries during the aftermath of the financial crisis. But Japan has had it for the longest time. So even when rates basically were coming back up to zero, or 10 basis points, which is just 0.1%. If you were a global institutional trader, what you would do is you would actually borrow in yen. And then you would take that money and you would margin it in yen and you would convert it to dollars. So you could buy into the U.S. stock market. I know it gets technical. It would take me a couple of minutes to explain the intricacies of that. But basically what you are doing is you are borrowing from one currency and transferring that over into another currency to take advantage of the markets there. So you were borrowing in yen, converting that to dollars, and then buying into the U.S. stock market. Because you're carrying costs, because you have to pay that yen back, and the Japanese banks are charging you while you've got this trade on, but they're charging you basically zero, because the Japanese interest rates have stayed at zero, if even not below that, for a long time. This is a kind of a carry trade, as it's called. And you would take now your newly converted dollars and you would buy into the high-flying tech stocks here in the U.S. So this carry trade became all the rage in 2023 as the U.S. stock market was soaring, and especially these high-flying AI-related stocks. You know them all, NVIDIA, and you can go down the line. I'm telling you, folks, people that were doing this, these big institutional traders, were making a killing on both sides of the trade because they were, in effect, shorting the yen and making money there and going long the U.S. and making money there. And they were making a killing until the Japanese central bank said, enough is enough. We are going to start raising our interest rates. They raised rates from basically negative, just a slight negative, up to a positive 0.1. Wow, 10 basis points. But that's enough to cause some of these margined accounts, these institutional traders who are borrowing in yen, to start to sweat a little bit because now the carrying costs are even more expensive. But what really unwound this thing and what caused last Monday's debacle. And while we have to be careful if we declare this thing over, it could be, I don't know yet. Is there more unwinding to go? Because we're literally talking hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars at play here. But when the Japanese Central Bank in late July, I believe it was actually July 30th, then raised their prime rate from 10 basis points to 25 basis points, a quarter of 1%, all heck broke loose. Now, let me stop right there, come up for air for a second. Oh, by the way, I've got to take another break, folks. Just getting into the story, but it's really important for you to understand the background to this, even though it gets a little technical. I promise I'm going to end this part of the story. When we come back, I'll then explain exactly what happened and what this means to you and me, because that ultimately is the crux of all this. You're listening to the Dollars and Cents Show. We'll be right back.
Everything St. Louis Cardinals. It's Cardinals Conversations. Use the Odyssey app or hear it on your favorite podcast platform. From game analysis, player and management interviews, it's exclusive Cardinals content from KMOX Sports, where the Redbird talk never stops.
Welcome back, my friends. It's exactly 3:36 in St. Louis. Yeah, I'm getting a little bit more technical on the Dollars and Cents Show than I normally do. I apologize for that. So this is pretty rare that I get into the intricacies of how global trades work, but I'm just trying to dig just beneath the surface to give a basic understanding of what in the heck happened last week. And in particular on Monday, that caused the Dow to fall so much and then snap right back. And it's all about this cross-carry trade between the Japanese rock-bottom interest rates and the U.S., which had a stock market that has done nothing but pretty much go up for 18 months. And these big institutional boys and girls are able to kind of match the trade and profit from both sides. So you basically borrow in yen. Another way to put it is you're kind of shorting the yen, if you will. It's this carry trade, and you convert that over to U.S. dollars to buy into the U.S. stock market. So you're borrowing cheap money. Like I said, the Japanese borrowing rate has basically been zero now for a long time. This all started to unwind in recent weeks when the Japanese central bank started for the first time to see in a while inflation. Now, their inflation is a lot different than our inflation. They get some increase in food prices of 2%. And for the last 30 or 40 years, that freaks them out because they have had no inflation. So their central bank raises the borrowing rate, basically, which had been negative, up to just 0.1%, kind of where we were a few years ago. And that was the first shot across the bow. But what really got this volatility going was the second hike that they made right at the end of July, a couple of weeks ago, from 10 basis points to 25 basis points, which is another way to say quarter of 1%. Now, you may sit back and go, wait a minute. You telling me that the Japanese central bank raising what is basically their prime rate from 0.1 to 0.25, which doesn't sound like anything, started that big sell-off last Monday? The answer is yes. Because remember, you can't just look at the nominal number. It is a percentage. So if we have borrowing rates, I'll just throw out a flat number of 5%, let's say, and that borrowing rate almost overnight jumps to 7%, that's a pretty significant jump overnight. You don't see things like that. I mean, that's a 40% hike. That will start to cause some issues. However, what if you saw 5% basically go to 12.5%? That is what just happened in Japan. Same percentage. 10 basis points to 25 basis points. Now, it doesn't quite work as dramatic as the 5 to 12.5, but conceptually, it has that kind of chaos within the global financial system, and that triggered it. The Japanese central bank said, inflation for us is higher than we like. I know we just went from negative to 10 basis points earlier this year. Now we're taking it from 10 to 25. My friends, I can't tell you how big on a percentage basis of a hike that is. And that set the Japanese stock market aflame. The Japanese stock market, as we opened up for business a week ago, fell 12.5%, their worst day since the Black Monday day that roiled the global markets on October 19th, 1987. Now, our stock market back in 87 crashed 22.5% in one day. So there's no comparison by what happened last week and what happened in 1987. So let's start there. We're not going to panic or anything. But what happened, let's go back to these institutional traders. Remember, They started this whole opaque type of trading strategy by borrowing in the Japanese currency at either negative rates, so they're actually in effect getting paid to borrow, or let's just keep it simple and say it's zero. So it doesn't, there's no carrying cost other than closing costs and things like that, which is nominal. But now when you take that to 0.1% and now to 0.25% on a percentage basis, it's basically, I wouldn't say infinite, of course, but now when you're margining to the hilt and borrowing to the hilt, you've just gone up substantially and now you have to do something. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. I've borrowed to the point where I can't afford that kind of an interest rate, so you need to start selling off equities. The same equities that you were just buying in the U.S. stock market, a lot of tech stuff, because that's been the strong area, those are the first ones to go. To cover now the calls that you're getting from the bank to say, hey, you're over your margin limit because of what the Japanese central bank just did. Now, I'm going to stop there again because I'm getting very technical. I know I'm getting into the economics of this stuff. That's just kind of a 101 explanation of what started all this. When it comes to all of us and what the heck we should do, the answer is nothing. I feel like I should get out the old Seinfeld episode. What's the show about? Nothing. Jerry says, well, it's got to be about something. No. It's about nothing. I like to apply that in times of turmoil in the stock market and in the financial markets. Oh my gosh, Dave, what should we do? I'm going to bring out my George Costanza. Nothing. Most of the time. If you have overweighted in technology and overweighted in growth because you just thought, oh, well, that's the place to make money. And now you're being exposed, taking on more risk than you're comfortable and you are freaking out. Well, you should have never done that in the first place. Chalk this up as an investing life lesson. Maybe moderate your position. I can tell you in our little corner of the world, the Simons and Cordes team at UBS, we really didn't do anything because we already went into this slightly on the defensive side. We had taken some profits earlier this year in certain names. I can't get into that. Got a little bit more defensive. We are already a little defensive going in. We're not trying to match the runaway financial markets. That's not what our clients need. That's not what they want. That's not our client base. We also are always thinking protection on the other side. You don't get greedy, especially in times like this. My friends, my best advice right now is not to extend your risk right now. historically and traditionally, we are in a time of year that is normally more volatile. And one of the discussions I've had with clients lately is, hey, and this is before this even happened, as we were into July, we're just going to kind of sit tight for now, because traditionally, and the seasonality of this, the markets don't act typically very well in August, September, and into October. There's no guarantee that they're going to come under pressure, but the markets have done so well now for 18 months. We're just going to sit back now. I had no idea that this so-called carry trade was going to blow up. Who knew the Japanese central bank would all of a sudden hike their rates again? That just hasn't happened in decades like that. And it made this whole thing start to unwind. Now, it's not crashing the global financial markets, but one thing that I've been telling our own clients is, and the reason why we're not going to step into this right now, you don't know that this thing's over at this point. And is there some huge carcass out there that's barely beating, and it's so large and so big that if it dies, it's going to cause ripples throughout the global financial markets? We don't know it yet. We can't know it. We can't see it. But there might be a few nervous Nellies out there who see a potential ticking time bomb. Now, I'm not predicting that. Please understand. I'm not trying to worry anybody. Please understand. I don't have any evidence that anything like that is going to happen, but I've been at this rodeo long enough, more than 30 years, to know that when you get the global markets are roiled by something that very few people saw coming, it doesn't end just after a day or two or a week. There might be some reverberations out there that we're not aware of that may not even show up for another couple of months. Again, it's not a prediction. It's just, hey, now's not the time to extend for risk. I don't care what some analysts tell you that, hey, I think it's over and now you can go back and start loading up on tech stocks again. I can't tell you what to do. If that's your thing and you're a risk-tolerant investor, by all means do it, and you may be rewarded for it. But the folks that I deal with don't need to extend themselves like that. Make good gains over time, but give a floor underneath for protection and not be a hero. And my best advice to my listening audience right now is to adopt that kind of a mentality. So I'm going to kind of close up after this break, this final break of the hour, and really tie the loose ends of what we see and have been seeing and what it really means to us. But I hope that description helps to some degree. I know it gets very technical, and it may have flown over the heads of a lot of investors, but when you just boil it down and make this very basic, it is, my opinion, not something that is going to break apart the global markets. This is not 1987, even though the Japanese market just had its worst day since that 87 crash. I do not believe we're anywhere close to that. I don't even think we have a major bear market. But there are just enough rumblings out there that could cause some issues still for the market that we're not going to try to become heroes. And that would be my best advice to the average investor. We'll be right back.
Kevin Wheeler, this is KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
Ah, folks, I'm sad. No, it has nothing to do with the financial markets. I'm watching the monitors here in the KMOX studios and how the Olympics, now they're going through their ceremonies at the end. That part I don't care about, really. It gets a little weird to me sometimes. Maybe I'm showing my advanced age here, but I just love this year's Summer Olympics. Sometimes they connect and sometimes they don't, but man, just watching the Americans this year, and just so good. And in some events where we haven't medaled in years, or we barely or rarely medal, we got them this time and ran laps literally and figuratively in so many of these sports. And just to think, 4 more years we gotta wait. Shoot. But I'm out there, man. I don't care what it takes or costs. LA 28, here I come. All right, folks, I know that here in this first hour, by the way, Dave Simon's here with you, of course, and we've been getting a little technical more than usual, getting into some of this really real opaque types of stuff when it comes to these deep financial markets and strategies and all that. Here's what I really want to basically leave with you. Look, everybody listening right now who's got an investment plan, I underline that. remember what the goal here is. I can't help any of you who are just kind of day trading this thing, or you say you have a plan and you run for the hills at the first sign of trouble. I can't help you. But everybody else who's got a sound plan embedded into that strategy has to be those moments like now. You don't know what's going to cause it. You never do. Markets are always surprised by something. And there were very few strategists a couple of months ago that predicted this massive unwind of the carry trade with Japanese currency and U.S. hot tech stock market. But simplifying it down, that's basically what it was. And it started to unwind once Japan's central bank started to raise their own borrowing costs. And voila, you get last Monday, which was the real debacle, the Dow falling more than 1,000 points. The Japanese stock market, which was the centerpiece of all this, the real epicenter, had its worst day since the great crash, the Black Monday back on October 19th, 87. Now, is it the proverbial pebble in the pond where you see a few waves and now it's over, it just spread a little bit? Or was this a big boulder thrown in and the waves are just going to continue for some time and we're going to see some other things maybe start to drown in the wake of this? I can't tell you that. I just say now is not the time to be a hero. And certain investments are going to look more appealing than they did a week or two ago. And if you want to nibble on that, I have no problem. I just don't look at this market right now as a time where I would make any huge bets. I don't see the purpose of it at all. I will tell you that I was in the business back in 97 and 98 managing money. And we had a similar crisis that started overseas. The Asian currency crisis, I don't have time to go into a tutorial on it, but if you want to look it up, there's plenty of material on it. But it basically started in all places in Thailand and with their currency, the baht. And it took a while. And then countries started to unpeg themselves from other currencies because of some wild swings in interest rates. And that started this cascade in the Asian markets. And we here in the U.S. were like, oh, well, it doesn't really affect us, until it did, because the largest hedge fund known to mankind at the time, Long-Term Capital Management, and it was run by some of the brightest financial engineering minds on Wall Street. A lot of folks said, well, these guys will never fail, until they did. And they had been borrowing and borrowing and margining using foreign currencies. And all of a sudden, it got the attention of then Chairman Alan Greenspan. The Fed politicians had to get involved and bail them out. And at one point, the U.S. stock market fell about 20%, and it could have been worse without a bailout. I still remember that, but I'm not predicting anything like that. But just enough of a memory for me to keep myself and my clients honest. We're going to change gears coming up, folks. Stay with us. We're going to talk about when to take Social Security. Stay with us.